The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Hey, so when you were a kid, did you ever see signs that told you not to play and think, but why not? And how many times have you watched children's natural play instincts get shut down by the built environment? Whatever your answer, you're in the right place because this is the Dr. Play podcast, also airing on Radio Southland 96.4 FM. I'm Damien Puddle, your professor of play with a PhD in parkour and a mission to make our cities more playful. Whether you're a parent, a city planner, or just someone who refuses to grow up, let's break some rules, challenge some thinking, and put the play back in, well, everything. Brace yourselves. Are you ready for a provocative question? How many play opportunities did your city kill today? Before you think I'm being dramatic, let me paint you a picture. This morning, a child might have walked past a perfect climbing tree only to see a sign saying, no tree climbing. A group of teenagers might have found an amazing wall for practicing their skateboard tricks, only to discover metal studs have been designed to prevent exactly that kind of fun. Or a family might have discovered a perfect area for gathering and games, only to find it's been fenced off because someone complained about the noise. Those aren't accidents, they're choices. And every day, our cities make hundreds of small decisions that either welcome play or kill it dead. And I gave the same provocation at the Asia Pacific Play Conference in Melbourne in June, and I'm going to walk you through some of the ways this happens, because it's not a question of whether it happens, it's whether we're aware of it, and more importantly, what we're going to do about it. Oh, the creative ways that we've found to say no to fun. There's the classic no ball game sign that is prolific in the UK in particular, and is probably the most honest. You know, it directly tells children that spontaneous social play is unwelcome, even in public spaces. The same sign exists for tree climbing, which shuts down one of the most instinctive ways children connect with nature. Tobogganing. You know, I lived in Canada. That was the big thing. And there's signs in Toronto removing all the seasonal joy with a blanket restriction instead of considered management. We're not always that blunt, though. Sometimes we try to soften the blow with more wordy signs that demonstrate that we don't quite understand irony. You know, something like, we want everyone to enjoy this space, so please note that ball games, climbing, cycling, and skateboarding are all prohibited. Or then there's signs that they're not on city property. We don't, you know, if local government doesn't own them, but we're not finding ways to advocate for alternatives. No play on school grounds before or after school, restricting children's access to familiar, safe play spaces during the very hours they're most free to use them. Or private property, no rollerblading, cycling, or loitering. That casts all movement and gathering as some sort of suspicious behaviour that needs to be stopped. So that's signage. Second, we've got our sort of more ingrained behaviours. We've always done it this way mentality is particularly prevalent in this space. If you've not heard of them before, something that's particularly horrible are mosquito devices, this high-frequency sound emitters that are designed to disperse young people, that older people can't hear that frequency, and so it's specifically, the despicable, but to, you know, be against young people, and they're congregating and playing. We install them because someone's labelled hanging out together as antisocial behaviour, yet surely loitering and hanging out together is inherently social. I hate that term. The real issue seems to be that they're not spending money. You know, it's against not having money in your pocket rather than social stuff. Or consider things like chicanes. They're the barriers at park entrances. We've always put them in there to slow down bikes or prevent motorbikes or things from going into certain spaces. But these days, they're more likely to block families with who've got trailers and adaptive bikes, when anyone actually who needs better access because they have a larger shaped wheelchair or something. Then there's the safety excuse. We kill play saying, oh, it's for safety. But often there's no proper benefit risk assessment. It's just a knee-jerk reaction, like blocking off we've got an example here of blocking off a driftwood fort on a beach because it didn't meet building code, as if kids were submitting it for building consent rather than having families make their own informed decisions about a random hut that they found on the beach. You know, they're not expecting that that is a house that they're going to live in, and that it should be therefore up to code. They can accept their own risk, surely. The third is around design, and this comes in three flavors. First, there's intentional hostile design, hostile architecture, carefully engineered to eliminate certain behaviors. You could picture a low wall that's perfect for balancing or sitting on, and it's topped with spikes. Those spikes, they're not for safety. They're saying, this is not for you. Then there's thoughtless design, and that prioritizes maybe vehicle efficiency over the human experience. A really wide intersection might look efficient for cars to sweep really quickly around that corner, but for children, that makes it dangerous and a barrier that disconnects them from their neighborhood. It makes it much harder to cross. And finally, there's ignorant design. Not hostile, just unaware. Like a big blank wall that could be perfect for ball games or art or climbing holds on it, but it's just blank. You know, it's a missed opportunity in plain sight. And actually, I just remembered in that the second design point about ignorant, the design that forgets about children, is there's a tool, and I've created one here in Invercargill because I saw it in the States, is a reverse periscope. And so a periscope, like in a submarine, helps you look out higher than what you are, so you can be under the water and poke your head out and look at your surroundings. The reverse periscope makes you shorter. And so as an adult, you walk around with the reverse periscope and you see the world from a child's view, and you start to realize, man, our traffic environments are not built with them in mind. No wonder it's difficult for them to navigate these spaces. So check out the reverse periscope, and actually it'll blow your mind about actually how difficult it is to see over the cars we build and how it is to cross these environments that we've created. So that's the design concept. The fourth is around regulation. These are our policy and our funding barriers. Sometimes great play projects get the axe because management or councillors or others, they don't see the value, or they prioritise other spending. You know, I've seen funding frozen, budgets balloon and delay implementation. And just last month, even here in Invercargill, an earmarked budget held for over 5 years was pulled. And so there are council bylaws that set the tone for what's considered appropriate behaviour. Skateboarding and wheeled recreation devices are often banned from city centres, and you know the bylaw says you're not allowed to do that in these areas, or potentially even a blanket ban at all. Some places have closed playgrounds because they breach noise thresholds or things that sit within a district plan or some other document that makes decisions around those things. Something like street basketball in a low traffic area can result in fines because it's creating street obstructions. And maybe not because it's not actually doing that, but you can look at it and just say, oh, well, it feels out of the norm. You know, a town centre plan with nothing but children or fun in it. Well, who's the town for then? Or a district plan, you know, the most foundational development document that never identifies the significance of play in what we design and build. So there are so many different things on purpose and on accident that cities do to kill play opportunities every day. And so that's the provocation. How many play opportunities did your city kill today? But it's really an invitation to ask the question, how many play opportunities can your city enable today? Because here's what we know. Play is essential for individual and social well-being. It's not just a nice to have, it's a must have. And it's a child's right. So how do we flip the script? How do we move from play killers to play enablers? It's got to start with awareness. Every sign, every design decision, every policy choice either welcomes play or kills it. Ask yourself, what message are we sending? Are we designing for control or for joy? consider partnership over prohibition. Instead of bulldozing DIY bike jumps, work with the people who built them. Instead of banning activities, explore how to accommodate them safely. Think about missed opportunities. That blank wall could become a community art space or a climbing wall. That unused stormwater area could double as a court or imaginative play zone when it's dry. The wide footpath to school could include playful textures, markings, or moments of joy. And remember, children see play potential everywhere, not just in designated playgrounds. The question is whether we're supporting that natural instinct or systematically crushing it. And I know that might sound like I'm being really hard on cities and planners, but the truth is most play killing happens with the best of intentions. We want to manage risk, respond to complaints, and maintain order. The problem is that those well-meaning responses consistently prioritize this control over joy. Efficiency over experience, prohibition over possibility, and adult needs over children's needs. But the good news is once we recognize those patterns, we can change them. We can choose to be cities that enable play. We can design spaces that welcome rather than repel. We can write policies that support rather than ban. We can respond to complaints by finding solutions and saying yes if instead of no to community play requests. At the end of the day, a city's relationship with play says everything about its relationship with its people, especially its youngest citizens. And those relationships shape the kind of community we become. That's it for today's podcast. Remember, life's too short not to play, and you'll shorten your life if you don't. So your fortnightly play challenge is to take a walk through your neighbourhood and count all of the play killers and the play enablers that you spot. And then share your findings with your local council. They might be shocked to discover how many opportunities they're inadvertently eliminating through their decision making. Get out there, have some fun, make some fun, and let's make our world more playful. Until next time, you've been listening to the Dr. Play podcast on Radio Southland 96.4 FM. Catch it on radiosouthland.org.nz, Facebook, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the Access Media NZ app with the kiwifruit logo by selecting Radio Southland.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.